I'm Jana Marin, and you're listening to Season 2 of More to the Story, the podcast that's all about creative nonfiction and the power of sharing your personal story.
Tell me a story. Tell me true. I want to know what happened to you. The stars are all out and the night is so blue. Tell me a story and I'll tell mine to you.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode number 8 of More to the Story, a show that is all about something near and dear to my heart, telling true stories and sharing them with the world. In addition to this podcast, I also publish a literary magazine called Under the Gum Tree, which is dedicated to creative nonfiction and visual art. The magazine is published quarterly in digital and print. If you enjoy the readings on this show, I encourage you to check out the complete stories by purchasing a single issue or getting a subscription. Your purchase directly supports the work of the writers and artists we publish. Digital subscriptions are $2 a month and print subscriptions are $7 a month. All that info is online at underthegumtree.com. On today's episode of More to the Story, I'm joined by Matt Young, one of Under the Gumtree's previous contributors. Matt is a Marine veteran, a writer, and a teacher. He lives in Olympia, Washington, where he teaches at Central College. He holds an MA in creative writing from Miami University. His work can be found in Yesemi, Word Riot, Tin House, River Teeth, and others, including Under the Gum Tree, of course. His essay, Equal and Opposite, appears in the July 2016 issue of Under the Gum Tree. Before we get to the interview, here is Matt reading his essay, Trajectory, an excerpt from his new book, Eat the Apple, which comes out in January 2018.
Trajectory. In early 2009, I am tasked to hold security on an Iraqi man sedated in a hospital bed. I've just left him, replaced by the next guard. The man was shot in the left calf, but the bullet exited close to his abdomen. I'm amazed by this. The elephantine swelling caused by the wound fascinates me. To relieve pressure, the doctors cut the man's skin to the muscle. They do not explain to me why they had to relieve the pressure in this way, but it leaves the inner workings of the man's striated sinew exposed, pink and glossy, hard to look at, but impossible not to. Sometimes the nurses let me flush and loosely redress the wound. Sometimes I press just a bit too hard, or am careless about where my fingers make contact. There is a part of me that wants to see the man suffer. I have been told he was shot because he was also shooting, though his bullets didn't strike true. Bullets are tricky. They don't travel in the straight lines movies make them out to. Bullets move in parabolic freefall. They begin to tumble, asteroids in space, toward their point of impact to do whatever damage. Small caliber bullets, like a 5.56mm ball round from an M16 or M4, are not made to travel through bodies and leave an exit wound. Rounds fired from an M16A4 service rifle travel at 3,110 feet per second. But even at close range, a 5.56 might not make it all the way through a person. The bullet will start to tumble through the viscera and fracture bones and make secondary fragmentation within the target's body, and it might enter the chest or the abdomen or the face, but it might end up exiting through the kneecap or the elbow or the buttock. Both holes might be small, but internally, it will look like someone egg-beatered the organs. A human can't act on a bullet once the bullet has entered the human. There is too much velocity, too much power. Most times, the human doesn't even know the bullet has entered them until it has exited or become lodged somewhere against some dense bone or within thick tissue. I have acted like a bullet. I entered lives and bounced and ricocheted and broke and tore. Now I'm going to exit one life, and that life will have no say. Unlike the bullet, I am exiting by choice, not because of ballistics. I'm exiting because I have lied and cheated. Now that I'm sober, I realize those things are not foundational to lifelong bonds of marriage. I will exit 10,000 clicks away via international phone line because I am a coward, because I didn't have the courage to tell the truth to her face 2 months before with the Pacific coast of California as my backdrop. In that moment, I was still somehow tricking both of us that I loved her. I expect the conversation will be long, and I am thinking of the collateral damage of my exit. There are four weapon safety rules Marines learn in basic training. 1. Treat every weapon as if it were loaded. 2. Never point a weapon at anything you do not intend to shoot. 3. Keep your fingers straightened off the trigger until you're ready to fire. 4. Keep your weapon on safe until you intend to fire. There is also an unspoken fifth among grunts. Know your target and what lies beyond. I'm thinking about what I might hit upon my exit after these 4 years. How many relationships I'm changing the course of. How many people won't have control of that fallout. Just like the person in the next room can't control the bullet exiting the first body, traveling through drywall or stucco, and striking them. I'm in an AT&T phone trailer. The trailer is empty, for which I'm grateful. I use a calling card to phone. Hello? Hey, it's me. Hi, how are you doing? What time is it there? Early. Listen, I think we should talk. Silence. I just don't think this is working. I feel like I'm wasting your time. I'm not a good person. You don't mean that. What's going on? Nothing. This isn't working. It's over. I'm sorry. Phone clicks. That's it. Is that it? She was crying. How can that be it? No screaming, no fuck you. Clean. Surgical. Back in the aid station, the Iraqi man is gone. Well enough to travel, he was taken by the men who shot him to be interrogated at some other base somewhere. Maybe he'll be imprisoned, and maybe he'll be set free. I knew nothing about him, only that he was reported to have fired a weapon at soldiers, and I was to guard him, and that because of him, my sleep was interrupted, and so I hated him. The bed is spotless, sheets bright and starched and empty, and I start to feel like my bones are collapsing from the inside out, like I'm being eviscerated. I start to cry. I want to apologize to the man. I want to tell him I'm sorry for how I treated him, for not protecting him when that was the job I was assigned to. But the man is gone, and all that's left is an exit wound.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome to More to the Story.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenna. I'm really excited to be here.
So there's so much going on in that piece, and I can't wait to dig into it a little bit. but first, let's start with a little bit about your background. You are a Marine veteran.
I am, yeah. Yeah. I was in the infantry for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And so talk about how you came from that world into the world of writing, getting published, teaching, all that good stuff.
Yeah. It's a little roundabout, I think. I wrote a little bit in high school, and then when I joined the Marines, I kind of lost track of that for quite a long time. And when I went to school after I got out, I became a fishery and wildlife major because I kind of had this romantic idea that I would walk alone in the woods and not have to deal with people, and I could be really I could be really solitary, and it wouldn't really, you know, I wouldn't have to interact or anything like that. And then I quickly realized I didn't have the passion for that. And I was at Oregon State University, which has like a notoriously amazing fishery and wildlife program. And it's really competitive. And I was not there. So I had written an essay about Stephen Crane's The Open Boat for an English class, an intro lit class. And the professor called me into his office and had a conference with me, like he did with every other student, I'm sure, and said, "Hey, this is really good. Have you thought about making English your major?" And I had not at that point, because like everybody else, I was told that, you know, what are you going to do with an English major? You can't do anything with it. You know, people always tell you you'll be poor, you won't have a job, or you're working McDonald's or whatever it is. But I decided to switch anyway. It seemed, you know, I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the classes that I was taking in English and lit, and I enjoyed the reading, and it really made me feel. Reading those stories, reading any stories, really made me kind of, after being in the military and kind of not really losing my identity, but having like this really hyper masculine identity kind of overlaid on you, like reading stories made me feel more empathetic towards people. And it kind of helped me become a better person. I think it helped me like bring me back to humanity. And so writing kind of came about because of all the classes I was taking. And I just started taking creative writing classes, and it was mostly fiction, and I tried to stay away from writing about the war for a long time, because when I did try and write about it, I wasn't really ready, and they ended up being like these really bad hero narratives where there was always somebody who didn't understand, like some civilian wouldn't understand why I joined the military or something like that, or why the hero was like quiet and despondent or something, and they just felt like really trite. And so I needed some space from that, I think, for a while. And then when I did start writing about it, it was really re-traumatizing. It was about a 3-year process writing the book that story appears in. And it was, my wife would tell you, it was a rough 3 years. I think my MFA program, I think I had a lot of resurgent military identity issues come back up, and I, my fuse got really short, and I had to really keep that in check. So it was an interesting journey, like going from that space of non-writing to where I am now, which has kind of been like an eight year journey, and still ongoing, definitely.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I wanted to chat with you, and I have to say, like, I'm super impressed by the work that you're doing, is
thank you,
because of that journey for you. And you like touched on it a little bit, this identity sort of switch from the military life to what may be perceived as a more sensitive, touchy feel. You know, writers are a little more, have this reputation of being a little more like in touch with their emotions, a little more, you know, kind of on the artsy, flowery end of the spectrum, right?
Absolutely.
And that is almost like diametrically opposed to that image that we have of the military identity, especially the way it's portrayed in the media and the culture that we see from like news, just like what we see on the news to the narratives that are popular with movies. Yeah. And so I wanted to ask you about that a little bit. If you what's your personal experience with just bumping up against that in kind of redefining your personal identity?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I've talked to a couple of people about it, and they seem to think that like, oh, you must have been that person in your platoon or your unit that was a little off and a little bit like, you know, I think they imagined me like quoting Tennyson or something like that before we were about to go on patrol. And I wasn't, like, I was a totally indoctrinated Marine. Like, I was there, like, I was there for it. Like, I wanted, you know, I volunteered, like, I wanted to go. And I decided to join the infantry, and I bought into it, I think, for a long time. You know, it wears you out pretty quickly and you get kind of jaded, but I definitely was not that person that was like reading poetry after or before patrols, or, you know, reading anything more complicated than James Patterson when I was deployed. You know, the libraries that you get over there, mostly like James Patterson, Stephen King, like anything mm-hmm. that's kind of like a serial novel, anything like that. So I was reading a lot of that stuff, but I was not exploring like my depth of emotion. And I think that a lot of that also, like, that change happened because I reconnected with my now wife when I was on my third deployment to Iraq, and we ended up moving to Oregon together. And a lot of it was her telling me, like, not letting me shut down and not letting me go internal and not letting me, you know. She made me feel that kind of stuff too. She helped me understand those emotions and what they meant and how to process that stuff. And she was, oh my gosh, so patient. Like I owe her quite a bit because of, you know, it's still an ongoing process, I think, for her. So I think that her trying to understand who I was and who I am, because she wasn't around for that most of that 4 years. And so she, God bless her. She really stuck it out, which is, you know, more than I can say for a lot of people. So I think I owe it mostly to her and my literature professors and my creative writing professors at Oregon State, honestly, I think.
That's amazing. I mean, good for you and for them for like being that the people that you needed at the time when you needed them.
Yeah. Yeah. I really can't thank them enough. I wish that I could, you know, hug each of them on the daily that I wake up and get to be the writer that I am and the person that I am right now. So it's pretty awesome.
So let's talk about the piece you read. Yeah. It's pretty short but very powerful. Mm-hmm. And the imagery of the bullet and the damage that it causes, you use it to compare ending a marriage.
So an engagement. We were engaged.
Okay. You were engaged. Okay. So talk a little bit about how that piece came together for you. And where did the idea of that comparison come from when you were writing?
Yeah, I think that when I started writing the pieces that ended up filling the book, I tried to avoid the parts about my fiance pretty like consciously. Like I wasn't comfortable writing about it because I am the bad guy in that situation. Like it's not really a two-way street there. It was always me. It was me causing a lot of the problems and me blaming her and not taking responsibility for that stuff. And so to write about that and to be honest about it is to really kind of acknowledge, you know, who I was at that point in time, which is honestly not a good person. And so it felt like I wanted to, I just wanted to kind of brush by that. And I, talking to some early readers of the book, they were like, you got to put that in there. Like we have to, it helps round you out. It helps round the story out. It helps make it more than a war story. It's got to be in there. You can't avoid it. And so I think that these kind of thoughts about the bullet and it helped me feel a little bit separate from the story. Like it helped me kind of take a step back and kind of depersonalize it, which I think is maybe kind of we're all kind of looking for ways to not indict ourselves, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think I saw that, like the bullet, as a way to kind of skip that indictment and to maybe put some of the blame on the bullet and take some of it off of me. At least it felt that way. I don't know if it comes off that way initially, but that was the way that I got through writing it. And how I thought about it, I think, was this kind of thing that's acting maybe out of its own nature and not because it can be helped or something like that. So that it kind of felt similar to me in a way, mm-hmm. and a way for me to not take responsibility, which is maybe not great, but I think it ended up working out a little bit. So
isn't that always the way? The thing that we avoid writing about is the thing that has to be in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I usually don't see that stuff. That's why I'm so reliant on readers and like kind of having people give me feedback on stories, because I feel like, you know, like early on, those stories all had like these kind of like hero-y narrative kind of, I wasn't ready to call myself or look at myself honestly. And so I think that it's good to get that feedback from people and to help them. They help you see yourself in an honest light. And I'm okay with that now. I'm in a good place about it. And I think that it's really integral for me to have a good community of writers around me that I can just throw a story out to them and say, hey, could you look at this? And they're really willing to give good feedback, which is mm-hmm. pretty amazing. Mm-hmm.
You said earlier that when you first started writing about the war experiences, it was re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about why did you keep writing and how did you deal with that re-traumatization and work through it and like push through it? It sounds to me like it would be something you would sort of have to push through.
Yeah. I think a lot of the time it was, I wrote the bulk of the book in grad school. And I sold my grad school pretty much on not that project. I sold them on me writing like weird, fabulism stories about the Midwest, and which is where I'm from. I'm from Indiana. So I was like, I'll write these strange stories and that's what my book will be, a book of stories. And then after my first year, in grad school, I had written maybe like six stories and done a couple of workshops, and the stories were not great. Like I wasn't super happy, and I'd felt like I was turning in subpar work. And so they had a graduate student magazine there, and they did a reading three times a term. So I got asked to do a reading there, and I wanted to write something that I was proud of and not something that I felt like I was just kind of phoning in. And so I wrote these four very short pieces about the military. One was about standing post in Iraq. One was about getting hit by an IED. One was about boot camp, and one was about transitioning out of the military, like your time coming to an end. They were super short. They were the first pieces I ever wrote to the book. And when I read them, they got really good feedback. Like people clapped and stood up, and it was like, oh my gosh, like they really resonated with people. And so I talked to my advisor and I said, you know, I think maybe I should write nonfiction and write these stories. And they kind of agreed with that. And then that summer, I just locked myself in my office and I wrote from, you know, probably 8 a.m. till noon. And then I would go on a long run to process everything that I had just written, like from noon to 2 or something like that, in the Midwest heat and kind of humidity, and as like some kind of penance or punishment for, like, you know, that the feelings that that writing had kind of created in me. So a lot of it, I kind of like, I'd always been a runner since I got out of the military. I hated it when I was in, but when I got out, I kind of found that it helped me, I don't know, process stuff, but I felt like it, it's a real meditate. It's like how I feel like I meditate, like I sort through things in my head and I can compartmentalize and move things around. And, the running and the writing kind of work conjunctively for me, like they're, or parallel, they're kind of there at the same time. Like if I'm not doing one, then I'm probably not doing the other. And they're, so I kind of have to, that's where I found that kind of process for myself. And I think that's how I pushed through that initial, like, this is going to be kind of horrible and you're going to relive this stuff. And the running really helped that, I think. Mm.
So I'm also curious to hear a little bit more about the response you got when you first read those stories to an audience.
Yeah.
And I ask because I had a very similar experience where when I went to grad school, I think this is typical of young grad students. You go and you think you're going to write either fiction or poetry. Mm-hmm. And for me, my fiction, I was doing fiction, and my fiction was, I think earlier you said some of your fiction was trite, and I had the same experience. It just was like super artificial, superficial, cliche, mm-hmm. probably like borderline chick lit stuff. Which I didn't want to be writing at all. But that's all. That's the only way I knew how to adapt my experience into writing at the time. And then when I found creative nonfiction, it was all of a sudden this freeing feeling of, oh, you mean I can write about my personal experience in a literary way.
Yeah.
But for you, Matt, with your experience in the military and sharing those stories, I'm wanting to explore a little bit more this idea that, like, what you're writing about and sharing are not the typical stories that we hear about military experience.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that like for you, as like you're having a positive reception when you are encountering readers and an audience looking to hear true stories? So is that contrasted with any sort of reaction that you have from, like, your military peers? Mm. Or, like, it just seems to me that you have kind of these two worlds that are opposing each other a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a negative response from anybody yet. Okay. I haven't been called like a non-patriot. I don't know what you're like. I haven't been called a communist yet or something like that. So,
well, that's good.
So I stress yet. I'm waiting for it to happen. But mm-hmm. I or a traitor or something like that. I think that. But I haven't had that response. I've had people be kind of disgusted. And they look at me with a little bit of pity sometimes. Like, I mean, that's mostly the civilian people who hear it that haven't served. And so I get a little bit of that, like, oh, you sweet little poor puppy dog who's been damaged. And which is like, I understand that reaction, but I do not like that reaction. And I don't know really how to, like, it's a weird, awkward social space to be in when somebody does that to you. And I don't want to say that I enjoyed that. My time, because I feel like I don't know if enjoy is the word that I would use, but I definitely don't regret joining the military. So that's usually what I say, like, it's not something that I regret. It's something that I've processed, and it's something that I accept. And it's something that, like, I feel without it, I wouldn't, you know, it's like you can play the what if game forever. You know, what if you hadn't joined? I don't know. I probably wouldn't be a writer, but maybe I would. Maybe I wouldn't have, you know, the language for the things that I understand now. You know, it feels like maybe I would be a little bit more naive. Maybe I wouldn't be the same person. So it's hard. It's hard when people, I think feel sympathy, or, you know, pity or something like that. So that's kind of an awkward reaction, I think, from people sometimes. And I think that there's also like the thank you for your service reaction too, which is not offensive in any, I don't think it's offensive, but I think that it's also another awkward space because, you know, most people don't know what my service was like, and it kind of demonstrates that, like, the immediate thanking, or like this, you know, somebody finds out you're in the military and then 0.5 seconds later you get a thank you for your service. And it feels a little bit disingenuous. I think, like, people, it's like a, you know, somebody holds the door for you, so you say thank you. And it feels a little bit like they're okay with that space. Which also, you know, what are they supposed to ask me? You know, like, nobody wants to make that misstep and say, hey, did you kill anybody? Or, you know,
that's exactly what I was thinking.
which, you know, it was, my nephew is, he just turned 9, and my other nephew is 6. He's about to turn 7. And they stayed with us for 3 days. Well, our parents went on vacation and they were kind of hanging out, and we were downstairs in the morning doing a puzzle, and they're at the age where boys get when they start to think about, like, the military, and they like guns and they like Legos and they like Legos that have guns, and their parents don't want them to have guns. And so the younger one asked me if I had been in the military, and I said, yeah, buddy, I was. And he said, did you ever kill anybody? And like, that was the most innocuous, innocent question in the world. And I don't think that, you know, he doesn't understand the implications of that. So I just said, no, buddy, I never had to do that. And, but I wish that people wouldn't get so offended at that question. I think that a lot of the time people are just, it's can be a kind of a morbid curiosity, I think. Mm-hmm. I've had people kind of like ask me that question and salivate when they ask me that question, and it feels a little bit gross. But I've also had people ask me that question because they have a genuine interest and they want to know and want to, like, understand, you know, people around them and who they are. I don't really know what the best way to navigate those spaces is. Mm-hmm. If I, like, correct somebody and tell them, hey, that could be kind of offensive to somebody else. I don't know. It's weird. The reactions, I think people keep a one arm's distance, and they talk about, oh, I really like the language that you use in that story. I like your word choice, or I like how you create images. So they'll talk about that instead of, like, the actual experience, which I think maybe that's safe ground. So
sure.
But mostly it's been good reception.
Well, I'm happy to hear that for you. And I will add to that by saying, one of the things that I appreciate about your work, Matt, is I don't find it to be biased either way. Like, you're not pro-military, you're not anti-military, but it is still one of the most, like, real experiences that I've encountered from a veteran.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's what I want and expect when I'm reading nonfiction, because I want to learn about what the experience is like for that person as close to the true experience as I possibly can, and then kind of leave that reading experience and come to my own conclusions around, you know, there's probably pros and cons to any sort of war effort, regardless of what the reasons are behind it, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, all that to say, I'm happy that you're finding your place as a writer and thrilled that you have a book coming out. So let's talk about the book.
Yeah. Let's talk about the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called Eat the Apple. And it is going to come out in February of 2018, from Bloomsbury Publishing. So it's pretty exciting. I'm very excited about that. I don't know what else you would like me to say about it.
Well, so the story read for this episode is in the book.
Yeah, and also the story that I had published with Under the Gum Tree is also in the book.
Okay, so yeah. It's a compilation of stories, or is it more narrative? Like,
it
how would you describe it?
Yeah, it has a narrative arc, and I think that somebody who read it recently actually said to me that it's less a war story and more of a coming of age story, and I can get on board with that, but it is all flash creative nonfiction. So each story can pretty much act individually of itself, or it can act, I think, as part of a whole. And so, which was something that I set out to try and do. It changes form a lot. It changes perspective a lot. There's some drawings and comics inserted into it that are kind of reminiscent of military humor. And so I do a lot of stuff like that. But there is the narrative arc kind of takes place chronologically. So it's kind of like the overlaying of identity, of military identity, onto like a teenager, and then this kind of, loss of individual self, and kind of this like communal voice kind of takes over for the bulk of the book. And then it kind of deals with these ideas of what happens when you're faced with leaving that community, with kind of, with kind of being thrust out into the world, with kind of having to rebuild that individual identity again, and what that looks like, and how scary it can be. So it stops there. It doesn't follow me into the civilian world. There's maybe one or two chapters that go into the future tense, but they're pretty conditional. But the book kind of ends with me facing what my life might be like. So not to have a spoiler, but still go buy my book.
Absolutely.
It's been a wild ride for sure.
So what are you working on now? Do you have a new book in the works?
I have some short stories that I'm working on that I think are not trite.
Excellent.
I'm hoping to move back into fiction a little bit, and take a break from the nonfiction. And I always have nonfiction ideas, but I feel like I've got to give that a break, because I feel like the thing I just wrote really, really took it out of me. And so I'm going to rebuild that or refill that cup a little bit, and maybe come back to nonfiction in a little bit. I've been writing a couple of essays. My brother actually wants to join the Marine Corps now. So he's 20 and wants to go into the Marine Corps. It's my biological brother, who I met my biological family a couple of years ago, and he recently decided that he wanted to join the Marine Corps. And so I've been writing a lot about that, and like, it's making me kind of, it's interesting because I have an adopted brother who's 8 years older than me, but he's always been older. And so I think, and so it's weird to have a little brother or a younger sibling who you care so much about, and that I've never had that feeling before. I've never had like this visceral desire to keep somebody safe. And it feels very raw. And so I'm trying to figure out ways to write about that. And have it be meaningful, not just for readers, but for him. How can I use what I know to maybe make him change his mind? But I also, we share the same genes, so I don't imagine there's going to be a whole lot of mind changing in that situation.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really interesting. I can't wait to read them when they're public.
Yeah, thank you. That'll be exciting.
Well, congratulations on the book coming out. Super excited for readers and listeners to get their hands on a copy. Where can listeners go to find out more about you and your work?
So you can find me at mattyoungauthor.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at @young_MEM_CSEE at Twitter. So I'm mostly on Twitter, so you can probably find me there at some point in time.
Okay, great. Thanks for being here today, Matt, and sharing your experience. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jana. I appreciate it.
That was Matt Young. Visit him online at mattyoungauthor.com. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at @young_M_C. Find all those links and the show notes for this episode at moretothestorypodcast.com. If you're interested in creative nonfiction and what is this all about, I wanted to tell you about a new audio course that I have available. It's called CNF 101, an audio course. You can sign up online from my website. The URL is janamarlies.com/CNF101course. And it's a 6-week email course, which means you will get a lesson emailed to you with the audio file to listen to the lesson once a week for 6 weeks as soon as you sign up. And those emails will include the audio, as I mentioned, reading material, a summary of the lesson for the week, as well as the week's homework. In 6 weeks, you will understand new things about everything you wanted to know about creative nonfiction, how the literary world works and talks about the genre. You'll have read excellent examples of the genre in different forms. You'll have practiced writing in each of the subgenres. You'll have access to the course material for future reference. You'll have continued access to a private Facebook group with other course participants. And of course, you'll become familiar with many resources available for continuing to explore creative nonfiction. I hope you'll check it out and join me. I would love nothing more than to support you in your writing journey of telling your true story. Next time on More to the Story, I talk with Ira Sukhrungrung about monsters we encounter in the world and the pen name that he used when he was a kid sending stories to The New Yorker. To subscribe to this podcast, go to itunes.com/moretothestory. And while you're there, leave a review. I love feedback, I love hearing from you, and it helps with the ratings. More to the Story is produced out of my home office in Sacramento, California, with technical and audio support from TJ Santoro. Special thanks to my husband, Jeremy Marin, who wrote and performed the theme song. You can visit us online at moretothestorypodcast.com. Follow Under the Gumtree on Twitter and Instagram at @undergumtree. I'm Jana Marlies Marin, just Jana on Twitter, Jana Marlies everywhere else. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon on the next episode of More to the Story.
Tell me a story, tell me true. I want to know what happened to you. The stars are all out and the night is so blue. Tell me a story and I'll tell mine to you. Sitting on the balcony, drinking up our wine, talking about the way that we used to live our lives. The words in the books, man, they're nothing but lines. I look into your eyes and you look into mine. You say, tell me a story, tell me true. I wanna know what happened to you. The stars are all out and the night is so blue. Tell me a story and I'll tell mine too.